Hello and welcome back to The Science of Work, where I, Dr. Lisa Belanger, take a deep dive into the habits, skills, work design, and leadership behind global trends in the workforce. A huge question that you are asking or should be asking is, how do we create and practice happiness at work? We're going to go right to the source for this episode. On today's episode, we're going to talk to Dr. Jillian Mandich, a scientist on a mission to help people live their happiest life. She is a published researcher, two-time TEDx speaker, the founder of the International Happiness Institute of Health Science Research, and co-leading the Canadian Happiness at Work study. The Science of Work is brought to you by the Quantix School of Business and Technology. Quantix's highly selective online MBA and executive MBA are designed with interactive micro-lessons and individualized feedback every 8 seconds. Experience the future of education. Go to quantix.edu/scienceofwork for more. Happiness and happiness at work have been extensively studied in the field of positive psychology, probably because we'd all like a little bit more of it. No one's like, oh, no, happiness, no thank you, I have enough. Happiness is a challenging concept to study, however, for many reasons. There's often a time contingency to it, meaning, yeah, am I happy right now? Or am I happy as a person, generally, with my life? In the workplace, there are components such as job satisfaction or happiness with the organization. Regardless of its complexities, the research is clear. Happiness at work is profoundly important to corporate metrics and personal well-being. To put some clear numbers around it, the Eye-Opener Institute, based in Oxford, United Kingdom, has run extensive, robust research for about 2 decades, and they found that happy employees were, well, high-performing employees. They take 1/10 of the sick leaves that their less happy colleagues do, are 6 times more energized, intended to stay twice as long with their organizations, and are twice as productive. In a study by the same research group of 32,000 respondents, happier employees reported being on task for 80% of the time. Well, no one's fully on task 100% of the time. 80%, well, that's an impressive number. Unhappy employees reported being on task only 40% of the time. In essence, the company is losing 100 days a year or 3.5 months of unproductive time. So the cost of happiness, or lack thereof, is extensive. The good news is that we as leaders and employees, there's many different ways we can increase happiness at work every single day. Let's chat with Dr. Mandich to find out how. What is happiness?
It's a really weird thing because we don't have to define it. As soon as you say happiness, everybody kind of understands it, right? But when you're a researcher and you have to define all your terms at the beginning of a study, things get complicated because happiness is a feeling. And how do you encapsulate that in words? So the best job I've seen, which is the definition that I use in my work and is commonly cited in the literature, comes from Dr. Sonia Lyubomirsky. And she defines happiness as the experience of joy, contentment, and positive well-being combined with a sense that one's life is good, meaningful, and worthwhile. And I like this definition for a couple of reasons. There's sort of 2 pieces, right? There's how we're feeling in the moment, joy, contentment, positive well-being. And then there's also like sort of more longevity piece, right? A more legacy, a more impact, a more meaning, purpose side to it. And I really think those 2 elements exist together across time to give us sort of a more complete picture of what happiness is.
Like if I was asked right now, like, are you happy? I'd be like, yeah. Like, I don't think it would be like an overwhelmingly yes or no, like, because to your point, there's the right now. And then there's like that greater picture of what happiness can be. And so yeah. I know this is probably not a lot of what people think about when they think of their work. Like, am I happy at work? So how does happiness relate to work?
The pandemic, one of the things that it has done is we've realized how separation between work and life is blurry often. So actually a colleague of mine, Dr. Ramit Billen, and I led a study in January and February of 2020. So right before the pandemic, we partnered with the Canadian Mental Health Association and looked at happiness in the workplace. And we had over 1,100 Canadians respond. And we know from the literature that happier Employees are more engaged, they're more productive, they're better problem solvers, they get better scores on evaluations from supervisors, more liked by customers, they make more money. So there's so many benefits to happiness. And that's like when we're comparing, you know, people at work that are unhappy to people that are happy. But I think even on a personal level, how we feel, we can't separate from our work. It's not like you walk in either the virtual door or the actual door of your office or work, wherever it is, and then you're somewhere else. You're still the same person. And what happened to you before you went through that door and on the other side of that door, you're still you, and the lens that you see the world impacts the work that you do. They're linked and we can't separate them. And I don't think we should, because all of that completes the picture of who we are. Part of us and our purpose and what we do is our work. And whether that's paid work, whether that's volunteer work, whether that's hobbies, whatever work is defined for us is part of who we are. And so it sort of encapsulates that sort of greater picture, but recognizing that they're not these two silos, they're all related.
I say the exact same thing as it relates to burnout, because it's kind of the opposite, where I'm like, if your lens in which you view the world is fogged, you're going to view that at work, at home, like there's not, we kind of talk about them like they're these great separate spaces, but that's not the case at all. So being able to understand how it relates in this one facet of life might help from an employee engagement perspective or like some of the other metrics you do, but there's not a different vortex you walk into to which you exist. So if I was an employer and I'm thinking about like, okay, what could I do to increase employee happiness from kind of a systems perspective, are there things we can do, or are there really good examples of companies that have done things to increase employee happiness?
A couple of the big ones are, one, autonomy. It's not controlling everything, but it's where do we have control or we have some freedom to make choice in our life. And autonomy is actually more of a predictor of our happiness than how good looking we are, how much money we make, how popular we are, or how good our sex life is. So it's a big one. And so in the workplace, what that looks like, you know, where can we give people freedom, flexibility, especially with this hybrid remote thing? Like, are we letting people set their own hours? Are we letting people, you know, maybe take some time off in the afternoon and then work in the evening? It seems like a small thing, but what it's doing is it's giving people autonomy to create then choice for themselves. And that's a really important piece.
Like how and when they do their work, right?
Exactly. As long as it gets done, does it matter if it's done at 2 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 9 o'clock, or 11 o'clock? And so, yes, there are times and places where we have deadlines and we have meetings and we have to do those things. But at the same time, it's really looking for areas of opportunity where we can give a little bit of freedom, a little bit of leeway. That actually goes a really long way. And it's also empowering for employees because it's showing trust. The employer is trusting you to get your work done, and they're allowing you the freedom and the flexibility to do it when it's best for you, but they're still expecting it to be done. And so it's also this really great way where you can start to build some more relationships with people, where when they do that, they build trust because they are executing and doing things on time, and the employer too. And that in and of itself is another great benefit to having that flexibility.
My last episode, the episode before that, all talked about autonomy as being such a massive predictor, but also trust. We're talking a lot and seeing a lot of distrust that is happening because leaders don't really have the tools or the training to know how to manage and trust. So are there any thoughts or suggestions around, if you are a leader, how do you trust your employees? I mean, that sounds like a naive question, but I do think it's one of the things that would make a big difference in today's workforce.
Oh, for sure. The Canadian Happiness at Work study that I was telling you about. So this was data collection right before the pandemic. Pandemic hit in March. This was January, February. And one of the findings that was really surprising was less than a third of employees felt that communication was good with their leaders. And that was before things went virtual. And so for a lot of people, that's added more complexity. I know it sounds like a thing like, oh, we'll be good communicators. There's a lot more to it than that. But when we look top level, having that communication is so important. From a work perspective, but also from a personal perspective. Like, I mean, you look at the Harvard Study of Adult Development, the longest running longitudinal study, and what they found was that the number one predictor of both our long-term health and our happiness is social connection. And one of the ways to foster connection is through communication. And so when we think about the benefits of that and how far-reaching they are, people are different. People need to be communicated with different styles, all of that. But starting to unpack that and looking at what does that look like, both in terms of how do you speak and how do you listen, right? Because communication is not just broadcasting. And that opens up the door when you can create a safe space for people to say, you know what, I don't like this idea, or let's talk about this, or even things like that within the workplace, it creates that space for people, which then makes them feel more valued. So it really does create sort of this ripple effect of benefits when you are able to open up that conversation.
From a like leader perspective, when we think of communication and how people do need to be communicated with differently, like there is this neurodiversity on our team, which is incredible. Do we just ask? Like, is that the first step in like trying to figure out exactly people's communication styles and how that would go?
Yeah, I mean, that's part of it. And I think even before that, it's awareness, right? That's the first step to any behavior change, because we can't change what we don't know. When we think ask, it means ask of others, but also ask of ourselves, especially when we're at work, we're so busy and we've always been doing things. Like, I think one of the silver linings of the pandemic is I feel like it's almost been like an amplifier. So things that were going really well are like even better. And things that were, there was problems or things weren't going so well, they're like not going at all or going worse. And so when we look at the opportunities for how we relate to other people and stuff, we're able to pause and sort of look at, how do I learn best? What rewards motivate me the most? Mm-hmm. And also the people on my team. But we were so busy beforehand, we didn't really think about it. We just did what we always did. Like maybe there was like team appreciations on Friday, right? And that doesn't happen anymore. But we can get creative and start to think, well, how do I feel valued? Maybe it's I get an email when I did a good job. We're having this opportunity to kind of check in with ourselves, like, what do I need? And to ask those questions. And then also the people that we do, where I don't think we had that as much before. So it's sort of this chance for change and a chance to be able to create an environment that's more supportive of what we want and what we need. And that starts with answering that question for ourselves. Like, it's interesting with happiness before COVID, when we used to do like in-person research interviews or like focus groups, one of the questions I would ask a lot is I would ask people, you know, are you as happy as you think you possibly could be? And I've never had anyone tell me yes. And then a follow-up question I would ask is, okay, well, what makes you happy? There was a pattern that was happening when I asked this question that I really had to reflect on, because when I asked the question, what makes you happy? What was happening over and over and over and again was one of two things. Either one, like before they started their exhale, they were giving me an answer. My mom, my dog, my cat, my brother, my sister. Or there was like a long pause and then an answer. Either your answer was reflexive, like you didn't even think about it, or you didn't know and you had to think about it. Right. And so no wonder we're not as happy as we possibly could be, because we don't know what it is that's making us happy. That's not in the forefront of our conversation.
Yes.
And so when we think about in the workplace, how that relates and how do we want to communicate with others? How do we want to show appreciation? How do we want to give appreciation? How do we want to build trust? How do we want to create a sense of belonging? All of those things, it starts with asking those questions and actually taking the time to not be on autopilot, but to really get honest with ourselves and ask and answer those questions.
The Science of Work is brought to you by the Quantix School of Business and Technology. Quantix highly selective online MBA and executive MBA are designed with interactive micro lessons and individualized feedback every 8 seconds. Experience the future of education. Go to quantix.edu/scienceofwork for more. Actually, I recently went through a practice. I called it drains and charges. And those that charge you, like, what are those behaviors? What are those habits? What are those skills? What are those conversations and people that you have energy from? And what are those that deplete your energy? And depleting doesn't necessarily mean bad. So for example, I talked about keynoting. It actually depletes me. Like, I love it during, and then I have this period of like,
because it's a big energy output.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's almost like I need the recovery phase. And then you can start designing your work a little bit more consciously, having these conversations and opening up this dialogue, and then thinking the same thing for happiness. What are the things that make you really happy? What are the things that kind of drain you? And then being able to accommodate from a work design or a date design perspective. So very quickly, what are the things that make you happy?
My dog.
Yeah.
I got a puppy 2.5 months ago or something. And you know, it's interesting, like when you read research and then you actually apply it to your life and you can like feel it. And I love animals and I've had pets, but not since I started studying happiness. And it's just amazing. And then the other thing I have to say, a lot of my speaking is around, you know, tools and strategies. And I'll talk about like gratitude or mindfulness or, you know, things like that. One of the topics that I never talked about, I just didn't get it. I was like, whatever, was awe. as like this sense of appreciation or wonder, but it gives you perspective. It's like when you go out and you stare at the stars and you see how big they are, and it gives you perspective. And like, I understood that, but I never cared. Like, it just never registered with me. Yeah. And then last week I went to the ROM, the Royal Ontario Museum in downtown Toronto. Mm-hmm. And they have a new exhibit, and it's basically life from the beginning until the dinosaurs. So it's like all fossils and stuff like that. And they had this rock there that was the oldest known thing on Earth. It was 4 billion years old, and you could touch it. And I went and touched the rock, and then I walked away, and then I went back to the rock, and I touched the rock again because like, there was something. And I like started to think about, what does 4 billion years ago mean? How were it there then, and it's here now, and I'm touching it? And that sense of awe, I got it. Yeah. And I went home and I started reading about it and creating opportunities to do that, whether that be like going for a hike and like appreciating like the fractal patterns in the leaves or the smells, or watching your child, like a young baby, play, or, you know, wandering through a museum or an art gallery. There is something so powerful about that in terms of our mindset shift. And I am just, for the first time as a happiness researcher, really appreciating that. And it's so powerful, and it gives perspective. And I think in a time right now where we're in, where we all need perspective, this is something where we can appreciate beauty, get context, and also have it create a different picture of what we're seeing and how we're experiencing it.
4 billion years. Did you feel super young? Like, were you just like, yes, this is amazing. But also I think what's so important when I hear that, and you're helping me define what I'm really passionate about, is being able to give people the opportunity to slow down enough to appreciate the awe, those moments that take your breath away, because those are the ones you remember, right?
Absolutely. I just got like so many goosebumps when you said that, because it's so true. But when you get to that place, you viscerally feel it in your body when you can, to your point, exactly what you said, slow down. Like, I could have walked through the ROM when they were giving the tour and then left and been like, oh, it was great, saw some fossils. But you actually have to take the time to be present, to pay attention to those things. And the other beauty of that is, we look at when we get into anxiety spirals, or we're feeling down or sad or things like that. I mean, it's natural and it happens to all of us. And when we start to reflect on this $4 billion year old rock, I don't know how much it costs, probably not that much. It takes us into the present moment, right? So we're not in the future worrying about what may or may not happen. We're not worried about the past, what did happen or didn't happen. And there's something really powerful about that too, to be able to be present in whatever it is that we're doing, and to appreciate that, sort of the ripple effect of that, is also something that I think is really profound.
Well, and it was about like during the pandemic, and arguably before, but certainly amplified during the pandemic, is challenging myself and then challenging clients and guests about, what is the thing that totally takes your mind away? What is the thing that like you're fully embraced and present? And if you don't have a thing, try to go find a thing, something that like takes you to that place where you're able to get some small bit of that consistently. Yeah. So whether it's art or music, or for me, it's paddleboarding, which is very unfortunate because I live in a place that's like frozen most of the time, but I need a winter activity that does it as well. But challenging yourself to find that, because I would say, if somebody said to me, like, what makes you happy? That's the first thing that comes to mind. Yes, my children, by the way, but like...
Sometimes, right?
Most of the time. Yeah. When we call dreams and charges, children can fall under both. But it's that thing that when we think of energy, when we think of happiness, like it's that thing that you can connect with, that you have control over. So how can we get it more of it at work besides 4 billion year old rocks?
One of the things around happiness that I think is really key is reframing how we think about happiness. Because so often we think like, I will be happy when, fill in the blank, right? When I reach my sales target of this, when I get my promotion to this, when I, whatever the story is. And part of happiness is recognizing that it's not a destination, it's a practice. And the other piece of it too is, like, what we think about happiness and what is actually revealed in literature are not congruent. So we often think it's the big shiny moments that bring us the most happiness, right? We think it's the graduations, the birthdays, parties, whatever. But what we know is that it's actually looking at creating opportunities for small bursts of joy throughout the day. That adds up to a happier life. And even if you do the math, right? Okay, your birthday, let's say you love birthdays, right? So that's 24 hours in a 365 days of the year. If it's 5 minutes here when you take a coffee break and you go for a walk with a colleague, or, you know, you celebrate someone's birthday at the office with some sort of a celebration, you get a burst from that. So instead of looking for the big moments, ask, where can I create small bursts of joy throughout the day? Because those small bursts create, like, you know, we call in research, like upward spirals of positive emotion. But basically it's like, it puts you in a good mood for a moment. And it's impossible to be happy all the time. Like, that's the other thing. Part of being happy is understanding it's impossible to be happy all the time. And that is not the goal. In fact, there's research that sort of often in literature referred to as like the dark side of happiness, where people that set their goal to be happy all the time are like paradoxically less happy. So if you're setting that as your goal, you're never going to reach your goal. And what happens when you don't reach goals, right? You don't feel good about it, or you feel down on yourself, or you self-talk.
This is why I can't say work-life balance, because I would never accomplish that, right? Like I would literally fail every single day. What I love is I heard somebody say, if you want to be happy all the time, you have dead people goals, because being alive is feeling all parts of the spectrum of emotion, and happiness is part of that. Right?
Yeah, it's a great part, but it's not the total.
So hashtag dead people goals. Okay. So I love the small bursts of joy concept and idea, because of part of my writing and what I do as I talk about small bits of mindfulness. And I would argue they can be similar, because what I try to be mindful of is drinking really good coffee, or maybe in this case, hot chocolate.
I'm drinking hot
chocolate. So what are some ideas? How could we add certain things? And if we're a leader, how can we encourage that in our team?
I think one of the easiest ways, and I say easy in terms of like time commitment, not in like easy to do necessarily, because it might feel weird. But one of the things, another finding from the Canadian Happiness Work Study that we found, was that there was about a third of Canadians felt appreciated at work. Feeling appreciated, it makes you feel seen. It makes you feel recognized. There's a lot of benefits to it on both ends. If someone that you work with did a good job, and you tell them they did a good job in whatever way that is, an email, a note, in person, on Zoom, whatever, you feel good because you just said something nice to somebody. And they feel good because they feel appreciated. It doesn't cost anything. It doesn't take a lot of time, but you notice, especially the littler things. You have some big project and like, okay, yay, we met our big sales goal. But what were the little milestones leading up to that? And were those acknowledged and appreciated and celebrated? That is such a small thing in terms of time, but the impact of that is so powerful to have that reflected. And I think as a leader, when you can, especially some of the smaller things, right? Like, I really liked how you ended that meeting the other day. Just little things like that, they're not so little. And that's something that can really boost. And when we look at like gratitude and happiness, they're so highly correlated and they're cumulative, right? And they build over time. So this is not just a one-off thing too. You actually get to see a cumulative effect of it. And we talked, you know, about trust and belonging earlier. That fits right in there too, because when you are feeling seen and appreciated, what happens? Trust goes up, belonging goes up, retention goes up, teamwork goes up, collaboration goes up. So it is something small, but the effects of it are quite far reaching.
I talk about this in regards to, I understand that when leaders are stressed and they're in survival mode, slowing down, appreciating, letting people know that they're doing a good job when they're feeling overwhelmed is incredibly difficult. Mm-hmm. They could set reminders. They can start practicing to slow down. I'm seeing a theme here of just slowing down. It's something that I've done. It's not perfect, but like, I will remind myself to appreciate my team and even like send thank you notes or gratitude emails, just because we get so caught up that when it's needed the most, we forget to do it.
Yes. I love that, because you're absolutely right. It's like when you're the busiest is probably when people are helping you out more. Like you're working, it's like crunch time. It's just, you don't have the bandwidth. So I love what you said about how can we create structures to naturally build this in? I was consulting with a company last week and they start their meeting by going around and everyone says something about someone else at the team that was good. So that's just how they start their meetings. It just happens. Or I have another CEO that I was talking to, and every day before he goes home, he sends one email to somebody that did a good job, but it's just part of his day. It's part of his routine. I love that, because whatever it is, or, you know, maybe it's like when I was at Sick Kids, we had Team Tuesday. And so we had a meeting every Tuesday at 2 o'clock.
Sick Kids is a hospital for...
Yes. Good point. Good call.
Very much an international listenership. My apologies for interrupting.
No, thank you. Great clarification. And so part of our meeting at the beginning was, again, we would go around and celebrate things that had happened that past week. If, you know, people got grant money or something, got paper got published. So there's that side of it, like the work side, but there's also the personal side too, where, you know, just to sort of circle back to what we talked about at the beginning about how work and life are not separate. So it's also about, how do we get to know people as people? You know, I think part of being at home, you see people's houses sometimes if you don't have like a virtual background, right? But that actually has been really beneficial for people because it builds more of a connection, or like your kid comes running in and you get to meet your coworker's child, which you never maybe would have seen otherwise. So there's the work piece, but then there's also, how do we see people as humans? And how do we recognize that? And, you know, whether it's a birthday or if someone's going through a really hard time, you know, maybe sending dinner or flowers or just anything like that. But looking at people from that sort of broader perspective, other than just they're somebody that I work with, you know, and just seeing them for who they are. That's something that I think goes a long way as well.
I keep thinking this thought, so I'm going to say it out loud. People remember how you make them feel. And I think that it's so notable. I can pick out people right now that went out of their way, either during a difficult time or a really good time, to send a quick note, to create an e-card, to like send flowers, like whatever it is. And it means so, so much. So when we talk about, and I hear this all the time, how do we network? How do we create relationships? Like any other time, okay? You be a nice human.
Yes.
We'll remember that. I think it's a more conscious effort now. And that's why it's so important to be invited into somebody's home, for example, in their home offices is one thing. And how do you use that information? How do you create meaningful connection with it? One of my favorites is when somebody goes to the washroom or gets up from their desk, you take a screenshot of their background and then use it as yours, because you can make...
Good.
So just being creative with this virtual world that we're now all in, and how we can create that meaningful human connection. Because to your point, and I talk about that study all the time, the depth of social connection and how much we need it. And of course, how much it shifted over the last couple of years.
I love the background idea. I'm totally going to do that. When I got my puppy and I went back for my first team meeting, my puppy's a French bulldog. I went on and my entire team had all put French bulldogs as their backgrounds. And I was, you know, but I still remember that. I'm talking about it right now. So those things, they really do go a long way.
I was consulting with a company and they went on some sort of social media platform and took the photo I took from my balcony and all made it their background. And until I realized I had posted on social, I was very concerned. I had this moment of like, wait, what? But I love that. I love that idea. And like, for example, knowing you for 5 seconds, as well as I do, your puppy is significant to you. So that's like something that's so lovely to see and see that support and like make a fuss about. So any further thoughts, happiness at work, how can we positively influence this in ourselves and others?
We all need that reminder, myself included, because I think especially when things get busy, focusing on our happiness and our mental health or whatever can kind of be the first thing to drop off. Even myself, like I'm a researcher and I study this and it's still a practice for me sometimes to have to come back to why these things are important. There's a different, not the Harvard study of adult development, but other research out of Harvard that actually found that our happiness spreads 3 degrees from us. So it really does go beyond just how we're feeling.
It's contagious. So,
yes, 3 degrees. And I think especially in today's world where things are heavy and there's a lot of hard, knowing that how we show up in the world impacts people, and then it impacts people that they meet, can be a good perspective shift. One of my favorite studies I talk about a lot, it was done at a coffee shop. I mean, it's probably before COVID, but it was trendy. And now I guess in the drive-thrus, people do it where you buy coffee or whatever for the person in line behind you. So in this study, the researchers measured the happiness of a stranger that had coffee bought for them. Not surprisingly, they felt happier because a stranger did something nice for them. And the person that did it also felt happier because they did something nice for a stranger. The piece that I think is the most interesting is anybody in the coffee shop that saw that happening also saw an increase in their happiness.
I love that.
And so I think to remind ourselves, you know, with this 3 degrees, but also our actions and our behaviors speak around us and we model that for other people. And so, you know, when we do something nice for somebody else, you know, we acknowledge somebody in a meeting, we're modeling that for other people as well. And we're impacting not only the person that did something good, but anybody else around that table gets to celebrate that too. And so even though these are small things, the impact of them is bigger than us. And I think sometimes having that context can almost create like a mini sense of awe, right? Because we have an appreciation that's bigger than we are.
Oh my goodness. Can we please coin the mini awe? Like I love it. So I'm challenging all listeners to go out and do something incredibly kind or express gratitude and create mini senses of awe all over the place. I love this interview for so many reasons. Number one is Dr. Mandich's French bulldog that appeared on screen several times during the interview. but also the realization that happiness research is essentially the complementary or opposite framing of the burnout research that I do. This is a much more positive and fun spin to add to my discussions. I'm also fascinated and amazed with the thought of happiness being a contagion. The ripple effect of gratitude, joy, kindness is not discussed nearly enough, and we as individuals have a profound impact on how we and our teams feel at work. What is one thing you can do today to increase happiness? What is one system you can put in place to increase happiness even during those very busy and challenging times? Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the Science of Work podcast. A special thank you to Dr. Jillian Mandich and her dog for the conversation on this topic. Thank you to my team behind the scenes who made this podcast possible from research to audio. For full transcripts and sources, please go to consciousworks.com. Remember, consciously design your day or somebody else will.